is March 17th. It's 5 after 3 o'clock p.m. I'm here with Mr. Herbert Marlowe on a follow-up interview just to answer some questions that I didn't get to and to cover some points that I wanted to go more in depth with. So Mr. Marlowe, first I'd like to go back and start a little bit in the beginning. You were drafted in the Army, right?
Yes, I was drafted in the Army.
So was your family, anybody in your family, were they in the Army before? Or was the Army something that you were fairly comfortable with going in, or would you rather have gone into the Navy at the time or the Air Force? Or they didn't have the Air Force, but then the Marines?
No. You had, you could volunteer, but my mother didn't want me to volunteer. She, her little boy, she didn't want me to.
Were you the youngest? So
I waited and I was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in December of 1942.
Okay.
I was drafted and was. Bus carried me up to Camp Landing, Florida, up there. And I was in the marshaling area there for 2 weeks. Then they were shipped us out on a train and sent us to Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And there was where we went to our basic training.
Now, what was the basic training like? Was it hard for you?
It was hard. Most all the boys that had went up there around the dead of the winter, and most all of us Florida boys. They had colds,
mm-hmm.
and we was down the train.
What was the like? Since you went in 42, and the war had just we were involved in the war, yeah. by then. What was the clothing like? Like, did they
clothing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they. We had some ODs, which are wool mm-hmm. clothes, or dress clothes. Of course, for training, we had these fatigues
mm-hmm.
clothes. And we used them. Only time we get ever dressed up in the ODs clothes was so when we got some liberty to go in Fort Bragg, which is only one time during the training.
Yep.
And we went to into Fort Bragg one time and tried to tear the town of Fayetteville. Tried to tear it up and a lot of us got in EMPs, put in jail.
Uh-oh. What did you get put in jail for?
Well, for fighting and this, that, and the other, you know.
Was it, did you get in scrap with other Army guys, or was
yeah, other Army guys, other outfits. Mm-hmm. We had one boy that he's from Michigan, and he was a huge fella, bigger than you, for what that goes, and muscle boy. And we was going down the streets and there, and then we were going to this bar there,
mm-hmm.
and where they had a dancing in there, you know. And they had a girl up on the stage dancing and everything like that. And so they got down there and they had got a fight in there. And so the MPs was there at the door. And every time they try to come out, they put some tear gas in there to try to come out. Well, this old boy, he'd grab him by the seat of the pants, you know, and throw him back in. And he threw about, I don't know, half a dozen of them back in. They wouldn't let any of them out. They was in there with that tear gas.
Mm-hmm. So. Now, did that go on your record or anything like that?
No, it didn't go on our record.
They kind of brushed it under the table?
They brushed it under the table.
Yep. Now, did you have any run-ins with any drill instructors while you were in basic training? Any experiences that stand out in your mind?
Run-in with that what?
Any particular P period or time in basic training where one of the drill instructors may have gotten in your face about something? Do you remember anything like that?
Oh yeah, they yelling at you all the time, doing push-ups, making them do push-ups and everything like that. They also run us through that. Under the barbed wire, shooting at us over the side.
Like an obstacle course type
of thing? Obstacle course, running through that. We did a 13-mile march in the shortest time that they had ever recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that. And myself on that, well, I blistered all my feet. Shoes was too large for me and everything, and it listed in there. And then we had to march back, come back, and there was six of us that made it back without the trucks having to pick them up. You know, put in the stable, the lieutenant. And of course, we had a full pack on us and everything like that. And took an old M1 rifle, and he went along with nothing on him. And he was keeping hauling us to come on, stay up with him, stay up with him. And there were the six of us that made it back all of them without having to be picked up.
Really? So you were one of the six?
I was one of the six.
Now, you had said that you were an athlete in high school. You played football and everything.
Yeah.
So was the physical stuff easier for you than you think?
Yes, it was a lot easier for me. In fact, Benison. Kind of foolish in a way. There's one little old fat boy, the lieutenant kept dragging him from the rear and pulling him up to the front,
mm-hmm.
and letting him ride back, and it made me so mad I didn't know what I could do. And we got out there and stopped. I stepped out there and I take my foot and dragged it across the dirt. I said, "I'll whip in the SOB that is out here if you'll step across that line." And he didn't step. I was looking for the lieutenant. I was wanting him to step across there.
Yep.
And he backed off. He wouldn't step across that line. And then I was determined to stay with him, coming back. I was sure enough there. And I stayed in it, but I busted my heels all the way.
Well, I remember the boondocks that I had to wear, and boondockers, I think they called them, in the basic training for the Navy. And we didn't do near the amount of running that y'all did. But yeah, those things were pretty rough on your feet, so I can imagine. And you had packs on and everything. So
yeah.
What was, when, you know, when you're in basic training, I know that a lot of the emphasis is put on teamwork. And, of course, that's why if one person messes up, they'll punish the whole group and that type of thing. And when you were in the military, it was more acceptable for the drill instructors to put their hands on you and hit you if they wanted to. Did any of that happen?
No, I don't recall or remember anything hitting him, but it makes you think they were going to hit you.
Yeah.
And yell at you and everything else, you know, like you see on TV now, like old sergeant out there eating them up. we had one of this, when we first got there, sergeant told him to line up outside, out there, and this old boy that I was telling you about, that old muscle down, he dragging around out there, and most of them told him, said, "Get your butt out there," you know. And he told him, he said, "Well, what you want me to do with the rest of my body?" And so he drew KP. And so every day, nearly about, he'd get on KP because he'd do something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I drew KP, and he talked me into going all over the camp. We just wandered all over the Fort Bragg there, looking at this and looking at that, you know, and everything. Supposed to be on KP doing duty, but wasn't. He and I was walking all over that place, and I was kind of glad to be along with him because they, he was much of a man, you know.
Yep. So, did you form any friendships in boot camp? Did you, or did you know any of the people from Florida, or from this area? Was there anybody that you went to basic training with that maybe you went to high school with you? Or?
No, I didn't have the first one that I from Newberry that was in there basic training with me, and I don't know where the. There was a busload of us went to Camp Landing, but boy, they all scattered out too. I don't know.
Yeah.
They interviewed me, and I wound it up in communication. So I didn't know. And I didn't know. I had been a crane operator all up until that time, dragline operator and all.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, well, maybe they put me in. Engineer or something like that, but
they
wound up putting
in gliders. Now, that was my next question. Well, actually, one more on basic training. What was the food like? Yeah.
Lamb meat.
Lamb meat?
Yeah, they ate lamb to the butt until I was blue in the face.
Did you ever have green eggs and ham?
Green eggs and what?
Green eggs and ham.
No, I didn't have green eggs and ham, but I had that. And we got a whole lot of horse meat.
Horse meat, really?
Horse meat.
Here in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Really?
Out there, there was in. And of course, I had worked on a meat market before, and I knew meat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought out that, they all know it was steak, so on the claim, you know. But it was pure horse meat, and I wouldn't eat none of it.
Yeah, because you grew up on a farm here in Newberry, so. But the food wasn't like Mama made it, right?
No.
And they definitely weren't as nice while you were eating it, right?
No.
Was there ever any point while you were in boot camp that you regretted it? You were drafted, but was there any point where you were like, I've got to get out of here, or I don't want to do this anymore?
No, not. No, I was in it, and so I knew I had wasn't going to get out of it. There's a lot of boys, several committed suicide.
Really? While you were in basic training?
Well, in basic training, you know, I just couldn't take it.
Anybody that was in your company?
Yeah. There's one boy that committed suicide.
What did that make you feel like when you found out that, you know, this?
Oh, well, he was awful sad for him, man. I mean, he did that. Yeah, it was a rough one, man. They put him, you know, to make men out of them. I was kids, a lot of them was kids, boys.
Yep.
17, 18 years old. And, of course, I was older than that.
Yep. Now, with that, you didn't have any regrets, and there obviously was definitely people that were, you know, if there was people that committed suicide, that was really heavy on their mind.
Oh yeah.
Were they constantly putting it in your head that you were going to war, that you were going overseas at that time? Were they pushing that yet?
No, they were. They weren't pushing that. They we knew we were going to war. As far as I know, somebody said. That, and in fact, when they didn't give me I might have told you that in another interview, they were supposed to give me a leave to go home, you know,
yeah.
After basic training, which they never did, and if I didn't get to come home till after the war was over.
Yep. Now, talking about that, since they didn't give you, I meant to follow up on that, when you said they didn't give you leave, and you were in New York, and you went AWOL for that one thing. Was there any, did they punish you at all for that? Was there any demerits or anything?
No, they didn't punish me at all.
Now, was that pretty common? Do you think the reason why they were punishing you is because you were going to war, or because you were...
The officers knew that we were going to load on the boat the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so our captain told us that he couldn't give us a leave like he had promised us that he'd give us a leave. But he said anybody that went away, AWOL, and they were back there by 8 o'clock the next morning, I said, that'd be all right.
That'd be all right.
So there was, I don't know how many of us went away, but they were over the fence.
Yeah.
In the New York City, and spent the night in New York City, looking at New York City.
Yep. Now, before we go overseas here, now, for what kind of glider training did you receive over here? Did you go to, was it Louisiana?
No, I didn't get any glider training at all in the States.
Oh, really?
Just a basic training, and they shipped me out 13 weeks, basic training, and then they probably 2 weeks in Ohio at a camp up there. And then shipped back to New York, and we, Camp Shank, New York, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Camp Shank? We stayed about a week, and we loaded on the boat.
Did you say Camp Shank?
Camp Shank.
Okay. All right, and so you go over on the boat, and you went to Casablanca, right?
Casablanca.
And that's when you were inducted, or that's when you were put into the glider regiment, right?
Yeah, that's right. 82nd, we go on
the 82nd. The 82nd, and then you got put in the 320th.
Yeah.
Did the 320th have like a motto or anything, like a unit motto?
Motto?
Yeah, like a, like my squadron, we were the Red Lions. Was there anything? Was the 320th, did they have a motto or a slogan like that or anything?
Not that I can remember offhand. Right offhand, I can't recall or remember offhand.
Okay.
Just before we got into Casablanca that we run into a bunch of submarines, German submarines.
No. That's why I was going to ask you what the transit was like over there.
Yeah, just before we got a convoy, and it was, I don't know how many ships it was, but.
These were Navy ships, right?
Yeah, they were Navy ships.
What kind of ship were you on? Do you remember?
We was on a big passenger ship named after some state. It seemed to me like Missouri, if I'm best I remember.
Wait, a battleship? I think the Missouri was a battleship.
No, maybe it was. But this was a passenger ship.
Okay.
But it was named after some state, I think it was, that we was on, and they was. The 82nd Airborne was on it, and there was Air Corps boys was on it, and then us replacements. We wasn't nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't been assigned to anything like that. And we got out about 3 days before we landed, in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we run into some submarines that got into the convoy, and our ship, they shot a tarpon at us.
Really?
And they gave us two signals to abandon ship. And we were on the third one. We were supposed to jump off the ship. And we waited in that. It was all dressed up with our Mae West on and everything ready to go in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And it missed the ship just past the bow of the
Did
ship.
Did you see it?
Yeah, just right.
Could you see the white trail?
Yeah, it was fire. So they didn't blow the third signal for us to go by the ship.
So how did the...
But they were dropping death charges all over around us, in and out. All those small boats, what you call them, they were...
Destroyers?
Destroyers, yeah. They were dropping all kind of death charges around us.
Trying to get the submarines?
Yeah.
So had you been on a ship before by that point?
No, I never been on a ship before.
So here you are, just got out of boot camp, and you're on a ship for the first time and being shot at.
Yeah, shot at that ship. The ship come out of New York and it went down to the equator.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hot down there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they was giving us shots. We had never given us all of our shots. And every time we'd go down to chow, well, they'd give us a shot in the arm, you know. And that shot must be so hot till it just about burn you up, you know.
Oh, really? Yeah,
I don't know what kind of all kind of shots. They give us, I don't know how many shots going across.
So there. Did you get sick at all on the boat?
No.
So you got shot at by the German submarines. What were you thinking in your mind? Like, man, I don't even know if I'm going to make it even there.
We're going to make it in there or not. You know, I never experienced anything. A little farm boy, you know, I didn't experience anything like that. And we landed in there. Africa there, and then we joined 82nd Airborne there.
Mm-hmm.
And 320th, and then they shipped us up to North Africa up there.
Mm-hmm.
And went through this valley where they had a big battle there, and German tanks were destroyed, and a lot of American tanks were destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
It's the final battle in Africa that they just had.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, we thought, well, goodness gracious, blowed up everything around there, you know, there's so many tanks and everything blowed around there. Well, when we got up there and got in the camp, they had a raid on Sicily out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the artillery and everything was 88s and Germans and all, and it was firing at it and made it so, gee, man, we don't want to be in that, we just don't have to. But we finally got into it and got a little more used to it, but right, first time we'd ever seen anything like that, you know.
How did that make you feel, seeing all, hearing all those shells going off?
I wondered why in the world anybody could come out of it alive, all them 88 shooting up there, mm-hmm. them airplanes and everything, you know.
Did you see any of your, any of your buddies or any of the people that were with you, did you see any of them die then?
No, I didn't see them die. When we got in Italy, they had a raid there, and one boy, he went to running and fell into a hole, and they killed him. And he was, it was a tunnel out there, and they had, battalions had it. All their artillery and everything down in that hole.
Mm-hmm.
Guns and everything down there. And we found the hole and looking for him. And we captured all that stuff that was in Naples.
Okay.
In Naples, and they had all them guns and everything in there.
Mm-hmm. So the when you went through your when you joined the 320th, what kind of indoctrination, what kind of training did they give you there in Africa? Was it pretty quick? Like
yeah it was it wasn't as hard as the basic training was, but they marched us a lot, and they found out that they. Due to the heat, that it was couldn't march as much in the daytime, and so they marched us through the night, a lot of tracks. And we had one glider training outfit. They carried us up on the gliders, and flew all over the top of Africa and flew out over the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of boys were sick from riding in that glider, especially over the land out there. Or you could look up here and the glider would be, plane would be up there for 1 minute, and next time you'd look, the plane would be down there and you'd be up there higher.
And
it was dipping and everything else, and it just made them sick. Air sick, or whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of boys like that. Sick.
Did you ever get air sick?
No, I never get air sick.
Now, during the training, were there any accidents during the training? Any crashes during the training?
Come again.
Did any of the gliders crash or have any accidents?
Not on that training.
No.
They made perfect plan. Is they set them down out there on the sand. There was no trees or anything like that to, you know, from the hit or anything like that. They made a perfect landing. But they did have a pilot and co-pilot, and they'd take turns trying to hold and steer it. And they'd be just popping out with sweat when it's fighting that thing. You
know? I've read that they were very, very hard to fly.
And they were very hard to fly. And see, one would take it for a little while, and the other would take it a while.
Mm-hmm.
Fly.
Now, so after you did that, and you went to Sicily, then you went to Italy, and then not before too long, you were in Normandy.
Yeah.
You said you spent 33 days in Normandy?
33 days in Normandy.
And I'm sure you saw some things that were just horrible. And but what were the feelings when you saw people that you were, you know, that were in your regiment, in your company, getting cut down by the German fire? What was your immediate feeling going through your head then?
I don't know. You just you kind of got battle hardened at that time, you know. And it didn't bother you near as bad as what you expected it. You tried to do something, but best you could for the ones that were wounded, you know. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember picking that one up, a sergeant, and took him over there. Of course, I was a radio operator. And I carried him back over there where I was and put a tourniquet on around his leg. He'd been shot in the legs.
Mm-hmm.
And different things like that, you know, you try to help each other out, you know.
Did you ever have a feeling of, revenge or anything when you saw, fellow American soldiers getting shot?
No, I never did feel that way. A lot of the boys did feel like they wanted to get even with them, boys like those. In fact, when we was over there, there's some of them boys that they captured some prisoners, and they take them back and mow them down, and they go get feeling. And I never did do it myself.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can imagine. Did you, were you ever scared during any of the battles?
I was scared, but like, as I could be when I was captured.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. And so to go ahead and we'll move up to right before you got captured, I mean, you just spent 33 days in Normandy, and through what it must have been, some of the worst fighting during the whole war.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, that must have been a very exhausting experience,
yeah,
mentally and physically, and emotionally too. And you're back in England, and you had just gotten married, right?
Right.
And next thing you know, they're telling you that you're going in Operation Market Garden,
mm-hmm,
into Holland. Now, what was your thoughts about that?
Well, I had Market Garden got it up in such a big hurry till I had a word about it. And of course, when we went into France, they planned every detail out here, just what each one of them, everybody was supposed to do,
Mm-hmm.
And we felt like that Montgomery wanted some more glory, and he talked to Eisenhower and escorted him to that. That was his idea, to go to Market Garden.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have, they had already counseled one or two times that they was going to send us in there.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, well, they got us up in a hurry. Nobody hardly knew anything what they was going to do, what they were supposed to capture or hardly anything.
Yep.
And that made me wonder about it, worry about it, as far as that goes. So when we got on the planes, I got on the gliders, and we didn't know where we were going, what we were going, anything about it.
You were pretty concerned about the amount of planning that went into a Market Garden. Like you said, it got thrown together pretty quickly. From a historical perspective, I know that they were trying to capture a bridge or control a bridge over the Rhine, so that the Allied forces could control that. And when we had last talked, you said that you're in the glider and all of a sudden you saw a couple of the gliders that were flying along with you peel off, and you saw a forest coming up, and knew that was Germany. What were you thinking to yourself right then? Like, oh boy, here.
Well, when I told the glider pilot, I said, there's a couple of gliders landing, peeling off the land out there. I said, that's where, must be where we're supposed to land.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time, we was old. Going over the forest where it seemed just, and he didn't have time to pull the chain or do what another to cut us loose, something like that. And so we went over and got into that forest in there. And they told us later on that they had 10,000 tanks and an aircraft guns in that forest.
Oh, yep.
And they turned it loose at us. And so we got across it there. They cut us, the pilots cut us loose.
Mm-hmm.
And made a perfect landing for that goat, but her section of one plane load of gliders had been shot down going over Holland and all that.
Mm-hmm. Now the Germans, I know they routinely put those things up in the fields. They look like asparagus.
Yeah.
They used to put those up so that the gliders would be, you know, pretty much ripped apart when they were coming into land.
Yeah, that was in France.
That was in France. They didn't do that enough.
They didn't have enough time. Was a big place, you know. They didn't have fortified it or anything like that.
Okay.
So it was just perfect. Farm land, and
everything. So you made
that was a daytime landing. The only one that they'd ever had was a daytime landing.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the scenery like? You know, when you're flying over, did it look similar to you know what you were used to back here in Florida? Farmlands.
Oh yeah, farmlands, flatlands, a lot of pretty flowers, fields, and everything.
Did you ever catch yourself thinking, you know, this looks just like home or anything like that?
No, I don't think so.
Had too much going on to think about that. So
we landed there. We didn't know where we was at. The 9 glider loads I was there. As soon as we got them, me and some of the other boys suggested we split up, you know, and try to get back to line. And our lieutenant, which that's the first combat he'd been in, he said, no, he don't care all of us back. One load, you know. He carried us back all right, but it got dark on us and they come in and capture us.
So how many people were in your ladder load?
In the glider load? Well, most of it, there were 6 or 7 men in the glider, and I don't know what all the gliders had. Don't remember anything, but my glider, we had a Jeep.
Okay.
And with 6 or 7 men, some of them had 105 howitzers in it, and jeeps with artillery, shells, and everything.
No. So when you landed in the field, and what ultimately you'd actually landed in Germany, right?
Yeah, we actually landed about 30 miles into Germany.
Did you get in the jeep and drive to the farmhouse where you were captured, or did you just walk?
The farmhouse was right there, right across the road.
Right across the road. So you left the jeep there?
We left taking all of them jeeps and all the board, loading them up, and lined them up out there to go with them as far as that goes.
Okay.
But we were trying to find out where we was at, locate where we was at and everything.
So you went to the farmhouse?
Yeah.
And how much time went by from when you landed in that field to when the Germans captured you?
Oh, no more than 2 hours.
No more than 2 hours?
Uh-huh.
Was it just, were you overwhelmed, did the Germans just overwhelm you?
Yeah, they come in and on us about dusk dark. And they had us in there. We was in the farmhouse like that, so they kept hot enough to come out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to come out, or they lined us up out there.
Now, did you think that was it? Did you think they were going to shoot you right then? Or?
Yeah. They killed the first sergeant and shot 2 more boys.
Right in front of you? Or? Did they do that right in front of you?
Yeah, no. They'd carry me off down the road down there and back me up by a tree.
Okay.
And right there, lined the others up right there at the farmhouse.
So you heard the shots, but you didn't see it. So when you were captured, I bet your if someone would have been able to ask you right then what you thought about General Eisenhower and General Patton, what would you have been? What would you have said?
I said, "The hell would I?"
Because you said that it was General Montgomery, right? It was his idea. Well, no, it was General Eisenhower's idea for Operation Market Garden, but General Montgomery was the...
He was the instigator of it, and he talked Eisenhower into going into it.
Yeah. So here you are. I had just been in Normandy a couple weeks ago for over a month and just got married, and now you're being, you know, marched down the road by the Germans.
Yeah.
And, you know, General Eisenhower, he's sitting in a tent somewhere, right? So I can imagine you're probably thinking, you'd like to give that guy a knuckle sandwich or something, right?
Yeah.
So you went to the Stalag, and you had said from there they put you in charge of about 600 people for a march.
Then march them down to the railroad station and load them up on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And march them down there. And they had, this train had some passenger seats in it, and some of them are just boxcars. And we put all of them in there. And we was on there 4 days, I guess, and 5 nights.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped in Berlin, and the British bombed it at night. I never did understand why the British got to Brown at night and the Americans bombed it in the daytime.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, David had it. British bombing on the cover of darkness,
You guys were out there in the daylight.
And the American pilots was out there right in the daytime, easy to see and easy to shoot at and everything else.
Yep. Now so you took the train through Berlin, and then you ended up in the Stalag in, Lutz? Lutzburg, Lindbergh?
Lindbergh.
You ended up in Lindbergh, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were in Lindbergh at the Stalag there, and that's where you were, up in the with Jones and all those guys.
They were all the airborne was picked out of the ground bunch.
Yep.
And shipped onto this work detail up near Stalag, near Rostock, the city of Rostock.
And that was 311I, work camp.
Wow.
Now, how did you feel about that when you found out that they were picking you to fix the railroads that the Allied forces, the Americans and the British, were bombing? And then they were having you guys fix them so that the Germans could move supplies and troops back and forth.
Yeah. Well, American soldiers can just drag out and do practically nothing and make you think that they were working.
Mm-hmm.
So they would get out there and we'd kill time, much of wood, everybody would, and everything. So I don't know what mentioning that, but over Christmas time, we got turned loose.
Mm-hmm.
Did I mention that before that?
No, I don't think.
Well, at Christmas time, troops have been dragging out, and doing one or two rails a day, and whacking that. Well, we talked to guards, Pullman of over something there. So let us go back to our barracks on Christmas Eve. And if we done the work that we were supposed to do, you know, he agreed to it. Well, we done the same amount of work that had been taken all day to do, and so dark, you know. We did it in 4:12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody pitched in and know their job, you know, and done it. I said to myself, well, they won't expect us to do that every day. Well, we finished the job and marched back to the barracks. And so we got out there that afternoon, we got somebody and made a ball out of string, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Round up the string, and we got a little board, and we got out there and played baseball that afternoon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All the Germans from all of the little old town, they all come out there to watch us play that baseball, you know. And we played that baseball out there, and collared and hooped and everything else, you know. But we got down the line, you know, that the Americans were back winning the war again, you know. So we was having a good time out there, you know.
Yep.
Well, sure enough, when we got back, well, they wanted us to double up on the drills that we were. And we just dragged around and they finally did just give up, you know. If we could get two rails and do it, and we didn't. You know. And they sent some of the boys to work on some gun emplacements out there. And we found out that they was doing that, and so I told the guard on that, and I said, now the Americans are not supposed to do that according to the Geneva Conference.
Mm-hmm.
I says, we could work on the railroad, but we're not supposed to make gun emplacements on. And we convinced them that they weren't supposed to. I didn't know whether that was right or not.
But you guys weren't gonna. You weren't.
We didn't want to work on them guns.
Of course. So did you?
They put the Frenchmen on, civilian Frenchmen on, working on the tire. And we asked them what to do. They said, well, the German guard said that we didn't have to work on them, but they did. So they make them go out there and build them gun emplacements. So we backed them down.
How did that make you feel?
I felt good, you know. We all stuck together.
Yep.
And it all, when we do something like that, we all stick together on it and we back them down.
How did it feel on the Christmas day where you got to play baseball with me?
Oh, it felt good, you know. All that good.
Made you feel
and
like
we
you...
got, so the Germans would give us some oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
And some sugar. And that's what we had for Christmas dinner, was oatmeal and sugar.
No, aside from that, the only thing that they were giving you was one cup of coffee a day.
One cup of coffee.
And a bowl of the...
one fifth of a loaf of black bread.
Mm-hmm.
To 5 men. That's supposed to last you a week. You could eat it all in one day, or you could...
try to spread it out.
Spread it out.
And what was that? Didn't they give you some kind of soup, too? Well, it was...
potato soup.
But it wasn't really, it was the runoff from what they were feeding the pigs?
Yeah, it was peelings, a lot of peelings. Anyway, what they could get off of potatoes, you know, and put it in that pot there. And we had a cook that was cooking for one of the boys. And they got hold of some old tainted meat that was spoiled, and they brought it in there and gave us, he realized what it was, you know. And he refused to cook it for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so they fired him it's cooked. And I reckon they, or the whoever was taking the job, they cooked that meat. We eat it, I reckon. I don't know.
Yeah.
Along with that soup, you know.
Now, what kind of, I know that a lot of prisoners of war, and you, of course, you had, you were probably really dehydrated and had stomach problems and diarrhea and stuff like that. Did any of that affect you? Did you
have- Well, yeah, on Christmas Day, I had diarrhea so bad that we had a barrel sitting up there we used for the train, and I was up on that during that day, and that couldn't get some of the boys, they were playing poker Christmas Day, you know, for patches, and I got two other boys, the women, we went to the dairy to get some water, and I looked under the window there on the floor, and it was a dairy there, they had this big old hunks of cheese. So I could just reach it, and I, with my fingers, I kept munching it out, and then I got it and stuck it under my coat and carried it back up there. And the three of us, so we got us a good hunk to it and gave the rest of it to the boys up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it stopped me from having diarrhea, just eating that cheese. And
just eating the cheese. It stopped you up, huh?
Stopped me up. I thought that saved my life. I thought the Lord must have sent me there to get that cheese. It's the only thing I'd ever stole about it.
What was, to stay with food, I bet you would have literally killed for a hamburger or a cheeseburger or something like that. Was that, what, did you ever just think you were going to lose your mind?
The boys would tell them. They'd get in there and at night, you know, and they'd tell one that was going to, he was going to make something, you know, ungodly something about it. He was going to cook this and cook that and everything. Just thinking about food all the time. We had one boy that didn't think about food all the time. He thought about women.
So that's what y'all were, you know. So most of the guys were thinking about food, and you had a couple guys, you know, the one guy thinking about women. Do you think that helped, though? That helped you get through the day?
Yeah, it absolutely helped.
Just thinking about something other than something, where you were?
What you're doing there, something like that.
Now, you didn't get much time to sleep either, did you? Did they give you, how many hours of sleep were you allowed a night?
We got, we come in and at 10 o'clock at night, and we'd leave at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And catch the train going into this town.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the name of the town now. And was, then we'd catch the train back that night. So it didn't give us a short time to sleep, and we'd have a would come in when they give us a bowl of soup, potato soup, and we'd eat that bowl of soup. And if we had water, we'd wash the pan out, put the bead on it, but didn't matter. Let it stay there the next day and wash it. People need that.
Now, what did you think about, you know, if you can recall, what did you used to think about when you were laying there on your mattress, which was just a straw mattress, right?
Yeah.
Did you think about home?
Your wife? I thought about it a few times, and I didn't think about it much. I just thought about what was happening in there. You know?
What was happening right then?
Right then.
Okay. Were you religious then, or did a lot of guys talk about God and the Bible and everything?
Oh, no, they didn't. They didn't talk about it until funny thing, I might have told you in the last interview, I don't know, but the one boy from the next barracks over there that was a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
He come over there and at Christmas time on the nose, he wanted to, he had a Bible.
Mm-hmm.
On the nose, so I wanted to read the Bible. And I asked the boys, I said, he won't do it. He said, yeah, I'll read it. And so he read the Bible. Then they sang some songs of William, what I knew, you know, and celebrated Christmas there. And it seemed like everything smoothed off up until that time. They'd been squabbling about themselves, you know, and this, that, and all. And they just quieted off the back, and they worked together better and everything else.
What were the guards like? Were they real mean? Did they?
Yeah, we had one old guard. We called him Leaps.
Leaps.
He read the book.
Mm-hmm.
Leaps. Well, he's mentally off, and I warned the boys to don't cross him. You know, ever play the button. He's crazy. All right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he. He stuck a spear off his rifle on one of the rides. It was planted, playing sick.
Mm-hmm. Was that Dupree?
Yeah, Dupree. I think it was on the cheek there, right around his eye. That did not mean no work.
Mm-hmm.
And but at Christmas time, we had a little tree, you know. I think I told you about that.
Mm-hmm.
I used to repeat that though, I reckon.
Yeah. But you can if you want. I remember you said that he come up stumbling up there. He was drunk and he had some girl with him.
Yeah, had a girl with him and she wanted that tree.
Mm-hmm.
And. So he put in, we're going to take it, and all them buddies around backed around, told him no, he wasn't going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Backed him down on it, scared him off of it.
Yep.
And,
were there any, when you were out working during the daytime on the tracks, did any of the guards ever, you know, strike any of the guys, hit any of the guys?
Yes. The one boy there. Chastain.
Mm-hmm.
He a little hot tempered, you know. The guards taking him off down there to a shack down there and beat him up.
Mm-hmm.
And brought him back. And when they liberated him, he left us. He was going to go back and find him. And he was going to kill him if he could find him.
Yeah.
And of course, he couldn't find him. And he'd come back to us.
Now, was there any particular point or any time while you were, you know, during the 9 months that you were a prisoner of war? Is there any time where out of those 9 months that you just thought you weren't going to get out of there, maybe?
Thought you wasn't going to get out? Or
yeah, did you ever think that?
No, I just kept thinking, I said, well, America won't be here sooner or later. So, of course, I didn't realize when I got captured, the Americans were going like under Patton. They were going just as fast as they could across there. And I had a feeling, I said, well, they're going like that, and it can't last but a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't dream about that Belgian bull, and slow it down. And,
yeah.
And winter coming on too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought, well, we'd be free here in a few days anyway.
Now when you, skipping ahead to, you know, the day that the one German guard came in and told y'all that the Russians were coming and everything like that, There's some documentation on the Russians and how, you know, if the Russians would have liberated you guys, they may have taken you prisoner, even though they were the ally, because they had taken some people. Had you heard of anything like that?
Well, we've heard that some of them was sent back, you know, to Siberia and all like that. And sometimes, you know, it's hard, you know, how much truth there was in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they stopped us, and they run past us, and we spent the first night there, well, then they taken over our mansion that we had there. We got them some Russian girls and all, and everything. And what was so bad about it, you know, you see, in German girls, the Russians would take them and pack them on the back of a motorcycle with a cab with them, and raping them and this, that, and the other, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I might have told you about saving one of them, girl.
Yeah, you did.
But it was not uncommon to see them riding a motorcycle and having the girl on the back of them, be a German girl, make her ride. Things like that. We didn't have too much respect for the Russians.
Yeah. Now, what about the Germans? How did you feel about them?
The Germans?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in a sense, you kind of admired them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
They were our enemy, but they kind of stuck to the rules, you know, of war.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me kind of admire them, you know, about it.
Yeah, as far as, I mean, obviously you didn't have a nice time being a POW by any means. It wasn't
a nice time, no.
But the Germans did treat the POWs, I don't know if you can use better as a word, but more towards the Geneva lines.
According to the Geneva Conference.
Than like the Japanese and the Russians. Now, what did you think about the Japanese at that time?
I hadn't much thought about them, to tell you the truth. We didn't hear much about the news from the Japanese part.
What about after Pearl Harbor had happened?
Oh, yeah, after Pearl Harbor happened, well, boy, everybody, the Americans, was ready to go and whip them right then.
Yeah.
They was a grumbling about being drafted or anything, right? Wanted to stop it, you know.
Get over there.
They couldn't understand why that they got with Churchill and joined the British to fight the Germans, and the Japanese had wanted to jump on us.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were making your way with all the guys back to the American lines, and you had a couple encounters with the Russians and everything, how did you get back to the American line? Were you walking? Did you get a vehicle or a bicycle or a motorcycle?
Have a horse or anything else we could do to ride, or
so you got horses?
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. So you were riding a horse then?
Yeah, I ride a horse. I was practically one of the farm boys in the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And we come across this this nice castle there, you know. And it had a beautiful statue.
This is an editor's note. End of tape A, side one. The interview continues on tape A, side two.
Well, we'd already been down, gentlemen, and one or two more, because going, every time they see a horse or something like that, they'd go take the horse, just take it right out there and give it somebody to ride, or have a wagon pulling a load of them, you know, like two or three wagons, you know. And, so that's come across that stallion, and then everybody wanted somebody to ride him, and I said, well, I'll ride him, you know. So they blindfolded him, and I climbed up on him, and they pulled the blindfold off of him, and he went to bucking to beat the man. Man, he bucked, and he bucked. And I had to hold on to the saddle to stay on to him. And so he quit. I put him riding down the road then, and my butt was so sore from riding it, and skinned all up too, with that old saddle in there. So I give him somebody else then, and they take him. And I got me a bicycle and started riding the bicycle.
Really?
But they rode that. Everybody wanted to ride that stallion then, after he got it broke down.
After you broke him down, right? But you had ridden before, you know, growing up.
Oh yeah, I rode horses all my life, kid, you know, grow up.
What kind of, do you remember, what color was this? What kind of horse it was? Or?
No, it was a race horse.
Like a thoroughbred type of?
Thoroughbred horse, I don't know.
All right. Might have been Seattle Slew's granddad or something.
Seattle Slew's granddad, not buddy, but it was a beautiful horse.
So you may make it to the American Lions final. And what feeling overcame you when you got back to the American line? What did you?
When we got back to the American lines, Russia stopped us, and we wouldn't had a barricade there, you know, on the road, wouldn't let us go no further. And then there's two doctors that come up there. And the Jeep. And they pulled up to stop on me and Novak. We were up there and jumped over the gate there and told that guard to its officer to speak with him. We jumped in the back of the Jeep, told them to turn around and said, get the hell out of there, you know. So they did. And carried us back to the hospital that night. And from then on, I beat my bush back to my wife. I got there, I got about 2 days hitchhiking and catching rides, and I'm back to home, got back to the hospital now.
I'm sure after 9 months, you know, you hadn't eaten a proper meal. No. You weren't really able to bathe while you were a POW either, right? And take a shower or anything like that. Did they allow you to take showers or anything?
Think what? Showers?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first night, first bath I'd had since I was captured.
So that'd been
my wife, she got me a big long tub full of water at the hospital there. Brought me some clean clothes, and I think I got in that hot water, and I just laid in that water for an hour.
Oh, I bet.
Didn't want to get out of it.
I bet that must have, I mean, you hadn't been able to take a shower or bath for nine months. What did you feel like when that water hit you and you had soap?
Man,
and
that felt so good, you know.
I bet.
She got out there and cooked me a breakfast and brought it up there, and I was keyed up and all. I could hardly eat any of it.
And I bet having clean clothes felt nice too, right?
Oh, yeah. Then all the hospital staff was coming down there and welcoming me to the home back, you know, and all. the doctors and them.
Did anybody, did like any Army personnel, intelligence guys or anything, did they come to you and try to find out where you had been? Or?
No.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Fact of it is, a couple of boys that we never have heard from them, whatever happened to them.
Yep.
Liberated them, or they were.
Whatever became of
Russia or what.
And still to this day, no one knows what happened to them. Now, so after you spend a little while in the hospital there in Germany, and then eventually you made your way back to the States and got discharged.
They shipped me down to Paris from the hospital building, and my wife come down there one night, and we met in Paris there. And the next day they shipped her out to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And they shipped me out a few days later to Casablanca. Airport down in France, I can't think of it now. Not the airport, but the Marsan area.
In France?
Yeah. Where the ships were coming into that.
Like Cannes or Nice or?
I can't think of it right now. It's right on the tip of the peninsula there.
Okay.
And I had a car boat from that there. Landed in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
My wife had already beat me ahead, got home before I did.
Mm-hmm.
I called home and she answered the phone.
That was coming back here?
Yeah.
So, I had asked you what you felt like, after you came back to the States and everything. And, about it, how it made you feel when you saw people complaining about, little petty things. And, of course, you had said that kind of made you, got under your skin a little bit because, those people you didn't think they really understood, and they didn't, what sacrifices were made by men like you. And
they didn't know. Most all of them. They done everything that they could for us during the war.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what burned me up more than just anything else. I went over to the VA hospital over there, and there was a soldier there, and he'd been in England,
mm-hmm.
and sit over there, and he had some little something wrong with him, and they gave him a discharge and sent him back to the States.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in there in the hospital, and there was about five other guys in there. And he didn't do nothing but bitch and grumble all the time he was in there.
Mm-hmm.
About this, that, and the other, problem. And so I just told him up there. I asked him, I said, what he done? I found out what he did, and he hadn't done anything, just been over there and got shipped back and discharged.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him all. I couldn't help it, Yeah. He hadn't did anything from the war,
Yep. Now, when, what did you do after the war? What kind of, did you go to school or what kind of job?
I went to school for a little while.
Where did you go to school?
In Newberry. And GI Bill of Rights over there. And I didn't didn't go but for a short while. I got a job as postmaster in there. So
you worked for the post office?
I worked at the post office.
Okay.
For 28 years.
Okay.
Retired out of the post office.
What did you think when the Korean War started?
Hmm?
The Korean War? Like, what feelings did you have?
I felt like it was a political war.
Political war? Same with Vietnam? Is that how you felt about Vietnam, too?
Same thing with Vietnam.
What did it make you feel like during the Vietnam War when you heard about these boys coming back that were drafted like you were? Different set of circumstances, but you know that.
Yeah.
You know, because that was a political war, and the World War II changed history. Could have been a whole different outcome if we would have lost. Yeah. But nevertheless, I mean, those guys still were drafted for Vietnam and fought there.
Yeah.
How did it make you feel when you heard or maybe even saw that they were coming back and people were calling them baby killers and spitting on them?
Well, I hated that on that part, because they went in over there to, and they were sincere in what they were doing and everything else. And, they was trying to win the war and everything. I felt good about all the soldiers and everything like that. So they're doing their job, but the political deal, I felt like that was the president's job and all to
do that. Yep.
Do what they have. And I didn't have much respect for them.
Yeah. No, but that was, you know, that wasn't the case with President Roosevelt.
No,
you liked President
wasn't
Roosevelt.
The case with President Roosevelt.
Yeah.
You're done. At the time, he was the greatest man the devil walked in the state of Florida. I don't know, he brought him out of the depression. And he stabilized the money situation and everything, and he put people to work.
What do you think about our present President Bush?
Don't make me say it.
All right. What do you think about what we're doing over in Iraq right now?
Well, I think we just got riled up in something we shouldn't have stuck our nose in.
Yeah.
I know that I felt like that son trying to do what his pa done. Finish up.
Trying to finish it up, yep. Okay. Well, that concludes all the questions that I had. And I just really want to thank you for your time and sharing your story.
You're welcome. I hope you can get some sense out of it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, sir. And with that, I'll stop the tape here. So thank you, Mr. Marlowe. And that's the end.